A couple of things happened last week. When I say last week, I don't mean chronologically last week. What I mean is in the Parsha last week. A couple significant things happened, and they're probably interrelated. We'll start all over again. A couple of things happened last week, and they are certainly interrelated. And what they have to do with is the point of time that we've gotten to, which means the 40 years in the desert are over. Last week, the major texture of the Parsha was one of death. It was Chukat, dealing with Paraduma, dealing with death, the death of Miriam, the death of Moshe, the death of Aaron, that sentence for Moshe. The subtlety underneath it is all those people that had died during those 39 years, which means there's been so much death last week, which now when you think about it, of course that's why the Paraduma was there, to deal with those, that death which took place. Now the flip side of that, and I would say the positive side of that, is that if the 39 or the 40 years are over, that means now it's time to begin the entrance to the land of Israel, or perhaps we can even call it the conquest. And that also, again, I'm not sure if we noticed it as it was happening, but that also happened last week. Although there were, I'm not sure what to call it, maybe perhaps we can call it a couple of false starts. Now, when we start this week's parsha, which is in source number 1, Pasuk Bet, this is one of these times that there's a machloket between the Masorah and the Archbishop of Canterbury, and we follow the Masorah. And therefore, we start by Pasuk Bet. Vayar Balak ben Zippor et kol asher asar Yisrael le'amori. Balak saw. Now, that's very interesting because we generally gloss over that. Yes? We generally gloss over that. And we say, well, he saw what was happening till now. Or we go to the next Pasuk, where we get to the real good anti-Semitism. Vayagor Moav, Mifnei Ha'am Ma'od Ki Rav Hu Vayakatzmo of Bnei Bnei Yisrael Vayomo Evel Zignei Midyan, and then start describing in anti-Semitic terms. But what was the impetus? The impetus was said really clearly that he saw what they did, and very specifically Le'emori. So of course any of us who are paying attention to that pasuk and want to understand what's going on, we need to go backwards a little bit and to say, okay, so what was it that happened to Emori? Because there that is the focus. Now, let's go back to the archbishop, pasuk Aleph. V'yisu b'nei Yisrael v'yichanu barvot Moav me'ever liyarden yirecho. So that's interesting because he believes that that's the beginning of this topic. That's the starting point, which by the way is not pshat. Yes, it's where they are, but that's not the starting point. Where are they? V'yichanu ba'arvot Moav me'ever liyarden yirecho. So where are we? We are on the other side of the Jordan, looking over Yericho, which means all of us who've cheated and we know what's going to happen next, that's where, you know, we're going to be crossing. We're going to be going towards Yericho, which means we are now really poised to enter into the land. All of the traveling, all the wandering that has taken place, we're right now sitting in what today we would call Jordan. We're sitting in Jordan, ready to go over. So that as far, again, is plus when you divide the Torah into prakim, into chapters, so that becomes the introduction that where are we? So therefore, because we're so close to Moav, that's why Moav is getting all worked up. Again, but the problem is Pasuk Bet. What did Pasuk Bet say? Pasuk Bet said, no, there's another specific background over here. It is not merely one of geography, of where we're sitting, of the fact that we're sitting in Arvot Moav. Rather, it's Kol Asher Asar Yisrael Le'emori. Okay. So, therefore, we have to move backwards a little bit. When we move backwards, let's go back to source number 2, which is Perek Kaf Aleph. V'yishma ha'knani melech arad yoshev ha'negev ki v'yisro derech atarim v'yilachem b'yisrael v'yishp mimenu shevi. Now, that is a really bad start. Who hears the Melech of Canaan? What's his response? Let's go to war. What's the result of the battle or the skirmish, whatever you want to call it? we had captives that were taken. And what did we do? We started to pray, we started to make vows. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael v'yitain et aknani v'yicharem etem v'et areihim v'yikra shem ha'makom chorma. So again, this was last week. Did we notice that last week? That we started to battle and we were victorious against the Canaanites, or at least some Canaanites over here? So the answer is, well, yeah. Now, we're skipping a little bit to go to Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'yisume avot v'yachanut b'yei avrim b'midbar asher al pnei Moav mi'mizrach Hashemesh. And here we end up by this place again, across from where the Moav is. Misham nasu v'yichanu b'nachal Zered. Misham nasu v'yichanu me'eva Arnon. Asher b'midbar hayotze migvul ha'emori. Now pay attention to this pasuk. Ki Arnon gvul Moav bein Moav u'bein ha'emori. So where are we? I'm sorry, I even actually considered maps for a second, but that can be your homework to consult the maps and take a look exactly where everybody lies, and that's important. But notice what happened right over here is that we are by the Gvul of the Emori. Now, why is the Emori important? Because we were told that the Emori is important, because what? That's what they noticed. But we don't know why yet. Pasuk of Aleph, which if you notice we skipped a little bit, Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim El Sichon Melech Emori. So here we've reached out to the king of the Emori, and we said, Lemor, Ebra ba'artzecha lo nita b'sadeh v'kerem lo nishteh. By the way, did we say this to anyone else prior to this?
Yes.
To who? To Edom, we said this prior, correct? To Edom, we said the same thing. As opposed to, Pasuk Kavbet, Ebra ba'artzecha lo nita b'sadeh v'kerem lo nishteh me be'er b'derech ha'melech me'lech ad ashen avorek v'lecha. V'lo natan sichon et Yisrael avur b'gvulo, v'yosaf sichon et kol amo, v'yitze l'krat Yisrael ha'midbara, v'yavo yatza v'yilcham b'Yisrael. Now this is a little different than what happened with Edom. What happened with Edom? Edom said no, and they were prepared to take, they said, we will take the sword, but when it came to Edom, we did not fight with them. That was in the previous parak. You do not have that in front of you. That was in parak Kaf. Vayishlach Moshe Melachim Mikadesh Melech Edom, Ko Amar Achicha Yisrael. By the way, this is different from the other ones. And I think for Moshe's part, it's a very nice gesture. You know, we are your long lost family. Atayadat et kol tlashem atzatan. And you know all the difficulties that we went through. Vayetu avotein mitzrayim, avanesh of mitzrayim yamim rabim. Vayareu lona mitzrim ulavoteinu v'nitzak el Hashem v'yishma kol. It's very interesting because here he tells the whole story. V'yishma kolein v'yishlach malach v'yitzeinu min mitzrayim v'inei nachnu b'kadesh ir k'tzei gvulecha nabrana ba'artzecha. You know, let us pass by. Lo navor b'sadeh v'kerem lo nishteh mei be'er. We won't be drinking any of your water. Derech ha'melech nelech. Lo natei yaminu smol ad asher navor g'lecha. We won't drink any of your water. I mean, listen, why shouldn't Esav be, or Edom be nice to us? You know, when they were thirsty, when he was thirsty and came in from the field, yeah, maybe we shouldn't bring that up. But that's very interesting because that's part of the reason that we went down to Egypt. The implication of buying the Bechorah was that now the covenant that existed between God and between Avraham by the Brit Bein Bitarim, that was inherited by Yaakov. This whole story that he just now told, we were the ones who went down to Egypt. We're the ones who were enslaved. We're the ones who fulfilled the 400 years. You were all scot-free in this. But of course, the flip side of this is, and we're the ones who are now on the way to go to the land of Israel. And Edom was listening to this and saying, are you out of your minds? Like, how dare you come back and say this? So that's why it's interesting. Vayomei love Edom, lo tavor bi, pen becher v'tzei l'kretecha. Are you kidding me? Right? Are you kidding me? You want to go? Yes, you won't drink water. Very nice. Because maybe I'll sell you some porridge, you know? And if we drink, okay, we'll pay for it. Right? We'll pay for it. No, absolutely not. Ba'am kaved uviyad chazaka. They went out to meet them, ready to go to battle. V'yoma'ein edom netoni Yisrael avor b'gulo v'yisrael me'alav. So therefore, we decided to take the hint. So it's interesting. When it came to Edom, we were not willing to go to war. We reach out to them. We speak in terms of history. We speak in terms of theology. We try to implore upon them that the fact that we are related, that we're family, and that we really have a common history and a bond, and therefore you should let us go by. We are children of Abraham, if you wish, but we're probably a little more than that. We're actually also children of Yitzchak. And the response is, of course, no. Absolutely not. Now, do any of you appreciate Edom's response to this? Do you like Edom's response, or you don't like it? You don't like it so much. Do you understand it? Yeah. Are we sympathetic? Do we understand that there is another history that they went through?
I understand, but I'm not sympathetic.
You're not sympathetic. Fine. We're not going to speak politics. So, but there is another narrative, and the narrative is their side about what happened and how they had an So, let's continue where we were up to in source number two. So when we turn to the Emori, what do they do? He said, let us go through. And what do they say? Not just do they say no, what do? They go to war. But, so you realize that there actually is a difference of response, which means Edom says, we will go to war. Like, we will. And over here, they actually do go to war, so it is different. And on the other hand, the difference was the way that we approach them. Now, the reason we approach the two differently, to me, is obvious. If it's not obvious to you yet, it will be as we continue. So we are still in source number two, Pasuk Kaf Hei, which is important, but not as important as Kavav, so pay attention. V'yikach Yisrael et kol ha'arim ha'ele. What does that mean? The conquest has begun. We have now captured cities. Where are these cities? They are on the east bank of the Jordan. Yes? And those of you who are thinking that the UN doesn't want us to be on the west bank, they also don't want us to be on the east bank.
Or the middle.
Or the middle, okay. Okay, I'm sorry you went there. There we go. Okay, good. We got all of our fringe lunatics to speak up now. So, but it's important that you guys get to speak. But if you go back, to what the original plan was, right, before 1948, or the other original plan, which is really interesting, is the original plan with Avraham, but let's leave that for the moment. Right, so over here in Pasuk Kaf Hei, V'yikach Yisrael kol arim ha'eleh, so what's important is that we've started to capture land. This is the conquest. Which means all those years ago when God says to Abraham, we're going to get, now again, you do have to look at maps and figure out what was included, what wasn't included, but now we've begun. But why did we begin? Not because we wanted to. Why did we begin? Because they attacked us. And what happened when they attacked us? They lost their land. I know all of you think I'm talking about today, but I'm not. They lost their land. The Yeshev Yisrael b'chol arei ha'emori, and we settled in all of the cities of the Emori b'cheshbon b'chol b'noteha, ki cheshbon ir Sichon melech Emori hi, v'hu nilcham b'merech Moab harishon v'yikach et kol artzo miyado ad Arnon. Ah, did you now realize what just happened? What happened? When it said in the very beginning that they saw what we did to the Emori, were they so concerned with the Emori? Was there great love between Moab and the Emori? What had happened over here was that the Emori and the Moavi, they had gone to war prior to this. They had this historical memory going back that the Emori are sitting on their land. And they apparently always had dreams, I'm reading into this now, they apparently always had dreams that they would one day get their land back. This is our land, right? They don't recognize that they lost. This is our ancestral land. We're getting our land back. Who does this land belong to? It belongs to us. Who are we? Moab. This is our land. There's only one problem. It hasn't been your land for a while. And who controls this land now? The Emori. So what has happened? Emori they figure that they can beat Moab, they can beat anybody, they can beat us. So where, you know, who are we? We're traveling along the way. They come out, they're ready to fight, they're ready to fight, they think they're going to win. And lo and behold, what happens? They lose. So now we have captured the land that had, they have the land which previously belonged to Moab, and they want their land back. So once you real, again, that's what I'm saying, you cannot understand the beginning of what's going on over here unless you go backwards over here. So again, Pasuk Kavav, now you realize why that's so important. Ki cheshbon ir Sichon, melech Amorihi, v'hu nilcham b'melech Moab harishon, which tells you it goes back a long time. V'yikach et kol artso miyado adonon, al kein yomru hamushlim. And that is, and this is fascinating, the Torah is quoting, and this is this well-known poem. Bo cheshbon tibanev tikonein ir sichon ki esh yatzah micheshbon lahava mikriyat sichon achla ar moav balei bamot arnon oy lecha moav avadata am kamosh natan banav pleitim uvunatav bishvit lemelech emori sichon. They were singing songs about this. They were serenading people with this. This was their national memory. We have conquered. We have vanquished. We have gotten rid of Moab. And for Moab, this was obviously a very deep historical wound.
Nakba.
I didn't say it, but you got it. This is their Nakba. But now it's even worse, because it's one thing to have lost to this powerful Amori, and now these Jews are walking around and they captured it from them, that they took the land which is their land. This is still our land. So by the way, isn't it interesting how things never change in the Middle East? This has nothing to do with logic or power. This has to do with self-perception. And it's one thing which was humiliating to have been defeated. It's another thing that the powerful people who humiliated them are now defeated, but by somebody else. Which means that this is their business. The fact that the MRE lost is a concern of Moab. So that's what I'm pointing out so far, that without understanding at least a little bit of the background, this does not seem to make very much sense. And now you realize that not only was this a battle, not only did they win, they wrote songs about it. They were, this is what the Moshalim were singing. This was the chant by the soccer games. I don't know. This was something, as I said, this was the Mashal. This was very, very big back in the day. Okay. Posuk Lamed Aleph, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz ha'Emori. And Israel settled in the land of Emori, which of course, if you're reading the Moabite newspapers, whose land is it? What do their newspapers say? They don't call it Eretz Emori. The Jews have now captured our land. You know I'm just leading you on, right? You know that, right? Okay. Good. Vayishlach Moshe l'ragelat Yazer v'kedu b'notev v'yirosh et Emori asher sham. And they completely vanquished the Emori. V'yifnu v'yalu derech habashan v'yitzu og melech habashan l'kratam. Hu v'chol amod l'melchama ederi, v'yomer Hashem Moshe, al tira oto ki b'dech natati oto v'et kol amo v'et tarzo, v'asit lo kasher sit l'sichon melech emori. So the emori now for us becomes the symbol of what? How we will continue to be victorious. Asher she v'cheshbon, v'yaku oto v'et banav v'et kol amo ad bilti yeshir lo sarid v'yishu et arzo. So we have two stories now. One is the story that we're telling, and that's us, by the way, is us. We are sitting in the land of Emori. We have begun our conquest. We have begun the fulfillment of the promise that God made to Abraham. We are coming back to the land after we have gone down to Egypt and were enslaved and so on. The whole speech that we gave to Edom, even though they were not interested, so we can cross them off the list of inviting them to Pesach because they're not interested in the Passover story. But that's our perspective. Again, going back. It's going back to Avraham. We left, and now we're back. We are back. So what does it mean we are back? We are back to fulfill all the promises. Everything that God had said, now we're ready for this. And therefore it started, of course, we got the Amori, and God says, correct, and now continue. But when you read the local newspapers coming out in Moab, they're telling a different story. The local newspapers in Moab, what story are they telling? Well, look at these people when it took our land. Excuse me, they're not touching you. This is your land when? By the way, you notice Melech HaRishon from, meaning this goes all the way back. It's hard to say exactly how far back this is. But this is not something which is recent, but as far as their national identity goes, they have been humiliated. This is their land. They're never letting go of that land. No matter what happens or who controls it, they still consider it to be their land. And as I said, now, I want you to pay attention to source number 3, because I keep referring to it, so we may as well look at it already. What is source number 3? It is the Brit Bein Abtarim. Vayomer l'Avram yodea teda ki ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem v'avadum v'inu otam abamot shana. They're going to be enslaved, they're going to be abused 400 years. V'gamet ha'goya sher yavodu dan anochi, and that nation I will judge. V'afrechen yetzi baruch l'shgadol, they will leave with great wealth. Parenthetically, we'll then build a golden calf with that wealth, but that's another story. Vata tavo el avotecha v'shalam tikvar b'seva tova. Vidor rivi'i yashuvu heina, and the fourth generation will come back. Ki lo shalem avon ha. You notice the Emori are here as well? What? You never noticed that before? You're probably thinking I just put it in, right? Rina does not trust me. But I can assure you, in your Chumash at home, it's also there. But that's very interesting. It's saying that you can't get this land yet because these people are going to sin. They have been sinning. They are corrupting the land. They will continue to corrupt the land. And God is saying, I have a little patience. But that's a very interesting message. I have a little patience. They're going to sin a little bit more. But when they end up sinning sufficiently, what will this land then do to them? And this is using a theme later on. The land will vomit them out. But over here, that's already said back to Avram in the beginning, that I'm giving you this land, but ki lo shalem avon ha'emori. The Emori have not completely deserved to be expelled from this land yet, but don't worry, they will be. They're on the right track, they will be. And then by that point, when it's time for them to be expelled, you will be getting this land. So, by the way, this is very interesting, because when we questioned whether the land of the Emori is our land or not our land, so what are you willing to say now? Okay, but what about the land of the Emori, which they captured from Moab? See, that's a little, see, 1 second. That actually is a little bit more complicated, because is that the land of the Emori, or is that land of Moab? And now you appreciate why I'm saying that we really need a map over here to take a look and to see where each thing is. Correct. I've said this before, probably the single most complicated class I ever prepared was trying to figure out the biblical borders of the land of Israel, because every time it mentions them, it gives different borders. So you apparently have a maximum and have a minimum. And also some of the descriptions, it's not really clear. All that I'm saying right now is, because I think that your question is the correct question, and that's why we should take out maps, but it's also the maps are guessing a little bit along the way. But over here, the issue of the Emori is important. And now you realize why the issue of Emori is important, because they become, at least in this verse, they're the prototype in terms of the land of Israel. We're told the land of the Emori. But what's the land of Emori? Because now we realize it's a little more complicated, because the Emori did capture land which was not necessarily theirs. So now you realize that there's a little bit more complication over here. Yeah. How many generations? 4 generations is the minimum. 4 generations was, I don't know, 4 generations was Avram to Yitzchak, right? Avram to Yitzchak, Yaakov, right? Yosef. That's 4 generations. 400 years is the maximum. That's the way the Michilta says it. What is it? Is it 4th generation? Or is it 400 years? So it says there's a minimum, there's a maximum. Okay? Rabbi Soloveitchik said, when it says that Bikesh Yaakov l'shevet b'shalva, when Yaakov came back after being in the land of Lavan, he says, oh, this was fulfilled. I was in a land that wasn't mine. I was abused. Now, this says which land it is. I was abused, and now I came back with great wealth, and the 4th generation come back. 4th generation, Avim, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef. So now we're ready to back. Bikesh Yaakov l'shev b'shalva. And then it says, God says, oh, you think that you finished it? You didn't even start it yet. It's okay. So my Rashi has. I said, Chumash it's Rashi, and it's not even on the right pasuk. So even if you look on Bayeshev Yaakov, it's not even there. It's on the next pasuk. Okay. Okay, continue. We are still in source number 3. Pasuk Yud Chet. Bayom hahu karat Hashem et Avram brit lemor lezaracha natati et haaretz hazot. Surely this is for you. Minahar Mitzrayim ad nar hagadol nahar prat. So from north south, that is a great deal. That is a great deal of land. Okay. I mean, if I talk about this, I'll never become the chief rabbi of the army. So I can't. So I can't say anything about this. But then it gives a little bit more specific lands. Et hakini, ve'et haknizi, ve'et hakadmoni, ve'et hachiti, ve'et haprizi, ve'et harifaim, ve'et haemori, ve'et haknaani, ve'et hagirgashi, ve'et hayevusi. So it goes and it lists a whole bunch of people over here. You notice the Emory is within this whole list. Now, part of the problem is that we have no idea who all of these people are, but we were just now, you know, given a list. How many are there that we were told here?
Ten.
So as much as we think about the seven nations, we were just now given a list, which was a broader list. So go back to source number four. You notice we keep going further and further back. So source number four is Perek Yud in Bereshit. When is this? After the flood, when we're told about the families of the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, v'Yafet. We are from Shem, right? We are Semites. We are from Shem. Uvnei Ham, okay, so Ham is the good one or the bad one? He is the cursed. So Shem, Ham, and Yafet. So Shem, Ham, and Yafet. So pay attention now to source number four. And you'll notice something. Uvnei Ham, who are the children of Ham? Cush, Umitzrayim, Fut, Uknan. The children of Ham, four children, Cush, Mitzrayim, Fut, Uknan. By the way, notice, all the people that have give us trouble are going to be on this list. The Cush, Yalad, Et, Nimrod. You now realize the Midrashim that speak, because I'll get into trouble if I say the Chumash, the Midrashim that speak of Nimrod wanting to kill Avraham, is actually a microcosm of the side of the Ham side getting rid of Am Yisrael. So therefore, it's going to be a very similar thing. Even though one could argue that Avram being saved from the furnace is actually pshat in the Chumash. Shotzeitim me'ur Kasdin may be the furnace of Kasdin, literally. V'kush yalad et Nimrod, hachel liot gibor ba'aretz. V'tehi reshet mamlachto bavel. So, where does Nimrod rule? A place called Bavel. The Erech Vakad Vakalena Be'eretz Shinar. So you have now Nimrod staying north, Nimrod being in Bavel. By the way, Nahar Prat is going to go all the way up to where he lives. This is going to be Bavel going up to Eretz Shinar. Uknan Yalad Et Sidon Ve'et Chet. Do we remember the Chetites? Where do we remember them from? Avraham, the Marat Machpelah, he buys from the Chiti, ve'et Chet, ve'et ha'Yevusi, do you remember the Yevusi? Yushalayim, ve'et ha'Emori, so who is the Emori? It's a child of Canaan. So when we speak of Canaan, the Canaanites, who are the Canaanites? Uknan yalad et Sidon, b'charo, ve'et Chet, ve'et Yevusi, ve'et ha'Mori, ve'et ha'Girgashi, ve'et ha'Chivi, ve'et ha... Ariki, ve'eta sini, ve'eta ridi, ve'tzatzmi, ve'eta chamati. All of these are children of Canaan. So when we're promised that we'll be given Eretz Canaan, what does Eretz Canaan include? It includes, apparently, all of these children of Canaan. But again, keep in mind that Canaan is just one son of Ham. He's got some other sons up his sleeve. Who are the other sons? We got Nimrod coming from one side. We got Mitzrayim coming from the other side. Do you realize now that this is not the first time I've said this. I don't say you realize. Remember this. That all of the people who misbehave in Sefer Bereshit, I don't say all, are predominantly people that are coming from the family of Ham. This is the Ham side who are coming and causing all kinds of problems that are taking place. But when we're going to be getting the land, who are we going to be getting the land from? We're getting the land from Canaan. And these are the names of the nations that we were talking about before. It may have to do more with land than with tribes at that point, the pieces of land which they now have. Pasuk Yutet, this is again for Shuli. Vayihi gvul haKnaani mitzidon bo'acha grara ad Aza bo'acha sdoma va'amora va'adama utzva'im ad Lasha.
So all the places that we just now described, now we just now got all the other ones that you wanted. Aza, Stone, Amora, all of this is the Cham legacy, right? You want to write a book, Cham legacy? This is the Cham legacy. Nimrod, Mitzrayim, Stone, Amora, Aza, all of, right? You appreciate what I'm saying? That all of the, correct. As you notice from the term, El ben Cham le mishpachotam, they've become separate people. By the way, they go to war. When do they go to war against one another? The four kings and the five kings are all of these people. They're all of these people that are involved in the war between the four kings and the five kings, even though I'll admit that I could not necessarily identify all of them. But when you look at the four kings and the five kings, you will find most of the names on both sides of the battle. Bavel on the one side, Stone on the other side. This is a battle among Bnei Cham. Why should this be so surprising to us? That's what they do. That's what Nimrod does. That's what these people do. They go to war. These people are violent. They're not nice to one another. It's not just that they're not nice to us. It's not just that Stone and Amor are not nice to guests. It's not. It's, well, you could call it anti-Semitism because these are not Semites. But they are willing to. That's what's so interesting. When Avram gets involved in that battle, Avram's getting involved in a battle between the Bnei Cham and one another. And it's this north-south, really, going on this whole place, which you want to know, Eretz Yisrael HaShlema, going all the way up this north-south battle. But Avram's getting involved in a battle between people who are all sitting on land, which really, by right, will one day be his. But we're not supposed to say that. Now, to answer your question, source number 5, well, it's the beginning of the answer. Actually, you want to know about Moab. So if you want to know about Moab, then we have to skip a little bit then. Moab, you're only going to find when you turn to source number 18. Is where does Moab come from? Well, source number 18 is when Lot goes and decides to live in Stone, which of course should be somewhat amusing. But here you have somebody who grows up in the family of Abraham. He goes and he moves to Stone. I don't know who he marries. I don't know if his wife is a Sodomite. I know it doesn't sound right to call her that, but I don't know what else to call her. I don't know who Lot marries, but Lot is somebody who chooses to live in the midst of this particular people. So I don't know also who his children are. But what I do know is what I read in source number 18 by Yishkem Avram Baboker, Elamakom Asher Amad Shem et Pnei Hashem, the place that he had negotiated. Vayashkef al Pnei Stom, and he looks over at Stom, Va'amora, Va'kol Pnei Eretz HaKikar, Va'yar Vinei Ala Kitor Ha'aretz Kitor Kivshan, and he sees the whole place is going up in smoke. Va'ya'al Lot Mitzoar Va'yeshev Behar Ushtei Benotav Imo, Ki Yarei Loshev Bitzoar Va'yeshev Bemarahu Ushtei Benotav. He's afraid to stay any longer in this broader Stone kingdom. L'cha Nashke Et Avinu Yayin V'Nishkafa Imo U'Nechiem Avinu Zara. Bo, let's get our father drunk. Which, by the way, is taking sort of like a page out of the playbook in terms of going back to Cham and to Noach. Cham sees Noach drunk, and therefore he does whatever he does. But it's again, and you, at least as far as the Gemara is concerned, there you have also some kind of homosexual, incestual overtones over there. But it's interesting. Let us get him drunk, and then let us sleep with our father. Skipping what happens. Pasuk Lamed Vav, Vataharena Shtei Benot Lot Me'avihim. They both become pregnant. Vateleda Bechira Ben, Vatikra Shmo Moav. Literally, Moav Mi Ha'av, right? Hu Avi Moav Ad Hayom. Vatsira Gam Hi Yelda Ben, Vatikra Shmo Ben Ami, Hu Avi Bnei Amon Ad Hayom. Which means that that Moav and Amon, but specifically Moav right now, Moav, so what are they? Are they Semites? Are they from Shem? Well, I don't mean Shem, S-H-A-M-E. Are they from Shem? Yeah, they are. They're from Avraham's family, but we do realize that something did go wrong over here. You have Avraham's family somewhat corrupted, but I ask, okay, so where did they grow up? So they grow up within Avraham's tent. Where does Lot grow up? He's in Avraham's tent. Who educates Lot? He is this really this person who is influenced by Avram, who takes responsibility for him when his own father passes away, and according to the Midrash at least, because his father also then jumps inside the furnace to see how that's going to work out, and it does not work out well, which is interesting. Again, somebody who tries to imitate. That's what the Midrash is telling us. You have Avram wannabe. You have somebody who's almost like Avram. Avram takes in the guests over there and treats them nicely. He takes in the guests and he says, okay, but take my daughters. Again, what kind of impact does that have on the daughters afterwards, right? Well, so you have this person who does chesed, but in a corrupt kind of way, and something really goes wrong with Lot, but still I'm going to say, where does Lot come from? Lot comes from the family of Avram. Who does Moav come from? Moav is from the Avram family, which right away tells us something that we should now have thought of from the very beginning. When we travel and we meet up with Edom, what do we say to Edom? We are family. We're a long lost family. We're the ones who went down to Egypt. We have no desire to go to war with Edom. Why do we have no desire to go to war with Edom? Family is one part, but what's the other part? It's not our land. God did not give us that. More than that, what does Edom, or really back by the time of Esav, what does Esav do? He leaves the land in front of Yaakov. I didn't bring that pasuk here. Yaakov comes, he leaves the land, and he goes off to the side. He makes place, and he... Okay, so it's one thing, just let's get into the national consciousness of Edom. It's one thing we're going to leave the land of Avraham and leave it to you. It's another thing if you think we're going to let you walk through our land in order to get to that land. Now, there's a limit to what we're going to do for you. We're not willing to be any nicer than we were by leaving, but we have no mandate to go to war with Edom at this point, and we actually do something which the people find very, very frustrating. What is that? We then have to go back south and go all the way around the land, and that's frustrating. Whenever you have to take a detour, it's something which is difficult. But when it comes to Edom, there is absolutely no desire to go to war. When it comes to the Emori, that's a whole other story. Because the Emori, then this will be our land. Okay, but we need to go backwards for a second, because there's another protagonist over here that we perhaps didn't pay attention. Go back to source number one. So now, after Balak ben Zippor sees what the Jews did to the Emori, and Vayaga Moav bnei ha'am ma'od ki ravu, and we're very frightened of them. Sorry, Moav is very frightened of them, or of us, as it were. Vayaketz Moav bnei Yisrael. But that's what's interesting. They're disgusted by them as well. Muktza. Vayaketz. There's this, back in source number one, Pasuk Dalad now. Vayomer Moav el ziknei Midian. Now Moav, well, they're not going to turn to the Emori. Why won't they turn to Emori? For a couple of reasons. One is,
they don't like each other.
They don't like each other. They've been going to war. But by the way, the fact that you don't like each other is not necessarily good enough reason not to turn to them. Yes, that's true. But the fact they don't like them is not, the fact that they don't like them is not a good enough reason. The reason they're not going to turn to them is because they were just now vanquished. They were just now defeated. That's the much more practical. That's the much more practical. But who do they turn to? Vayomer Moav el ziknei Midian. They turn to Midian and they say, "Atayilachu hakahal et kol sevivotenu kilochol hashor et yerek hasadeh." Look how these powerful people are coming and swallowing up the countryside, the way that a bull eats off from the field. Right? Remember the spies, that we're like grasshoppers in their eyes, and look at the way that their newspapers are reading it. You have this big Jewish machine over here coming and swallowing everything in front of it. So who do they turn to? They turn to Midian. Now, the turning to Midian is something which is interesting, and that takes us back to source number five. Yosef Avraham v'yikach isha u'shmo Keturah. Avraham goes and takes another wife named Keturah. According to the Midrashim and our theory of conservation of characters, then that is Hagar who comes back, but according to the Chumash, her name is Keturah. V'teled lo et Zimran v'et Yaksham v'et Midan v'et Midian. So who is Midian? It's the son of Avraham Avinu. Who is Moav? Moav is a great nephew of Avraham Avinu. Which then actually means something very interesting. But I want to continue a little bit. And so on and so forth. But by the way, there's a lot of Avram overtones in the names over here. Eifer ve'Eifer, Avida, Elda'a. There is some monotheism being indicated by the names given over here as well. Vayitin pasukei, vayitin Avraham et kol asher lo liYitzchak. Ulvnei pilagshim asher la'avim natan Avraham matanot. He gave them presents. Vayishalchem me'al Yitzchak beno ba'odenu chai kedma el eretz kedem. He kicked them out from this land, and he sends them to Eretz Kedem. There is a question, what is Eretz Kedem over here? What does this have in mind, and what is the purpose? Just at face value, I can say, sends east. So how far east? Apparently, outside of the land that will one day be given to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the one who's given, Yitzchak is the one who's going to inherit. And then it will be Yaakov, and then Am Yisrael will inherit. And they're sent out, they're sent east. Rashi writes, Natan Avraham Matanot, Pirsho Rabbeinu, Shem Tuma Masra Lahem. He gave them all kinds of powers of the occult. That's just very interesting. And the commentaries on the commentaries have difficulty with this. It says that Avraham, according to the Gemara, he goes and he explores all the religions of the world. So what does he do with his old magic collection? So he gives it to... But it's interesting, which if you come back now to this desire to have them curse Israel and use the occult to curse Israel, use curses and so on. So it's just very interesting to tie this all the way back to over here and reaching out to Midian. Look at source number 7, Kedma, Eretz Kedem, Amar Shalcham Klape Mizrach, Upirish Acharkin, Le'eza Eretz Meretzot HaMizrach Shalcham, Va'amar Eretz Kedem, V'hi Charan, V'or Kazdim, V'otan Galilot, Shinekraot Bistam Eretz Kedem, V'eretz B'nei Kedem, V'oto Aret Hayta L'Mishpachat Avram, L'Fichach Shalcham L'Shkon Sham, Ki Lavato Yikrevim Anshei Mishpachto. So he's saying, okay, Avram sends them back to his old family, who at least are, you see, you have to pay attention. I've been trying to get one thing across all day today. What are they at least?
Semites.
They're Semites at least. At least B'nai Shem. Go live with other B'nai Shem, but don't live with the Canaanites, the Chamamites, and so on. Go back and don't be influenced by these people. Go back to the people who at least are on the right side. The Bechor Shur puts it into monetary terms, and he says, Kedma Eretz Kedem, Eretz Aram, Kedichiv Min Aram Yinichinu Balak Ben Melech Moav Barei Kedem, which comes back to the very beginning of our parsha. Ushlacham Liyareish Chelko Mibeit Aviv. Avram didn't want to lose out on his inheritance, so he sends it back. Okay, you're my sons, meaning I'm going to have this new inheritance straight from God, but you guys have the right to my old inheritance, which means Avram. I'm going to use terms I shouldn't use. Avram converts and becomes Jewish, and therefore he loses his non-Jewish inheritance, but his non-Jewish children he sends back to inherit his non-Jewish father, as it were. So that as I said, all that becomes, that's how Bechor Shur takes it, and I think that's interesting. Okay, the pasuk that he quoted was in source number 9, V'yisama shalav v'yomar, min aram yanichenu balak melech moav meharei kedem, which actually implies that where did he go to? What's B'nai Kedem? Look at source 10, the Midrash. Hu makom ladato shel Avram Avinu, Aram Naharayim. Which, who do they go to get from Aram Naharayim? Bilam. Bilam, by the way, we're not told exactly who Bilam is from, but Bilam is from back from Avram's old town. So over here, what do we have? What's the confederacy, or the confederation that's put together? It is Moab and Midian, B'nai Shem, coming from Lod, coming from Avraham, going to get somebody else who is from Avraham's place. And as I said, that's the whole background. Source number 12, Ve'eila ha-melachim ha-shemachu be'eretz Edom, lefnei malach melech lefnei Yisrael, v'yimloch be'edom bela ben ba'or, which sounds quite similar to someone who will come later. V'shem Iro dinahava, v'yamat bela v'yimloch tachtav Yovav ben Zerach Mivtzara, v'yamat Yovav v'yimloch tachtav Chushav v'eretz ha-Temani, v'yamat Chusham v'yimloch tachtav Hadar ben Badad, hamakeh et Midian b'stei Moav v'shem Iro Avid. So now you realize, and the Mefarshim make reference to this, that Midian and Moav had also been fighting. Moav fights with everybody. That Midian and Moab had also been to war with one another. So what happens when Midian and Moab fight with one another? So then somebody from Edom comes and beats them up. So it's and ends up capturing the land. So as I said, this is not something which is new, the skirmishes and the fighting between one king and the other. You can go back to the five kings and the four kings, and you can go back to the Midian and Moab. All of these things have been going on and on and on and on. So now, Kedma is a place.
Right,
Kedma is a place. What we saw is that Avram had sent Midian, or sent the children, all of them, there. So arguably, Bilam also would be from that same, arguably, would be from the same place. Because he's from the place that Avram sends these people Kedma from. That's where, or family, perhaps. Well, but by the way, that's what's interesting. And again, if you haven't heard me say it yet clearly, I do want to say it clearly right now. There is a difference between when we meet up with Edom and how we approach them, versus when we meet up with the Emori and we approach them. What's the difference? The difference is one God gave us their land and one God did not give us their land. Using that same thought, what happens when we should be meeting up with Moab or with Midian as opposed to the Girgashi and the Chivi and the Yevusi and the Kna'ani and so on? What should be the difference? Canaanite land, which was promised to us, versus children of Avraham's land, which is not necessarily promised to us, which means that there should therefore be a different type of approach. But what happens over here? What happens over here? Moab, instead of waiting for us to come, turns to Midian, and by the way, apparently gives very, very bad advice. They're going to come, they're going to swallow us up, look what they did so far. Now, why does Moab do this? I told you, I know exactly why Moab did this. And all of you know why Moab did this. Why did Moab do this? Because the Chumash says why they did this. Why? Because they saw it Kol Asher Asa Yisrael le'Emori. That means they have an interest in all of this. And what's their interest? They want their land back. So they manipulate Midian over here and say, oh, look what the Jews are doing to everybody. Well, again, you all realize now that there's a manipulation? The Chumash said it. They saw what they did to the Emori. So they turned to Midian, oh, look at these terrible Jews, look what they're doing, and Emori, oh, sorry, so the Midianites are ready to come back. But there is a difference over here. The difference essentially is, going back to the Brit HaBein HaBetarim, that when it comes to the Emori specifically, and generally, that the children of Avraham or Bnei Yisrael have the right to the land of the Emori and the Kna'ani. By the way, now you think back at all the times, there's not so many of them, when it says, V'Kna'ani az ba'aretz. What does it mean, V'Kna'ani az ba'aretz? Then the Kna'ani still have the right to live there. Right? Avraham doesn't want anything from the Chiti. Right? He doesn't want the Chiti, right? He doesn't want the Chiti to feel that they gave him anything of any rights, right? When it comes to Melech Sdom, I don't want you to say that you gave money to Avram. You made Avram rich. When it comes to Avram's interactions with all of them, he doesn't want anything from them. He'll pay money for them. He doesn't want anything to do with them on that level. He gets dragged into the war because of Lot, which is funny now when you realize that. When you think back, you know, the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, Avram got dragged into this whole battle over here because of Lot. This whole thing over here is again because of Lot. And because Lot decides that he's going to live among these people, by the way, not following the advice that Avram apparently gives to the Bnei Pelegshim. What's that advice? Get out of this place. Get away from the children of Ham. Go back to where the Bnei Shem live. Live with the Bnei Shem. And now you realize also when it comes to getting a wife for Yitzchak. Again, we've done this so many times. When he gets the wife for Yitzchak, where does he send them? Not somebody who's local. We need to get somebody from the Shem family. When it comes to a wife of Yaakov, not somebody who's local. We need to go back to someone from the Shem family. What does he do, which is infuriating to Yitzchak and to Rivka? He marries daughters of Bnei Chet, specifically. He marries the people from the Ham family. So all of this becomes, you know, really, really quite interesting, but there is still a tension that I haven't fully explained. But by the way, now you realize something which is frightening to say. There is among Chazal a real tension over here. There are those who want to say that they did a chet l'shem shamayim. They did a sin for the sake of heaven. Why did they insist on marrying their father? Or marrying their father, I'm being polite. What? I'm being polite. They're not going to marry somebody who comes from the Ham family. That's one way of saying it, but it's very difficult to say that's pshat. You know why it's hard to say it's pshat? Look at pasuk lamed there in source 18. Vayal lot mitzoar vayeshev bahar shtevinot avimo ki yara lashevit bitzoar. He doesn't want to stay in Tzoar. Why not? Wrong people. There are people there. I'm saying the pshat and the chumash is there are people there. They climb out. There's Tzoar. There's a whole city there at Tzoar. They don't want to stay there. So I'm saying, to say, right, I'm going to say it again. Chazal have an approach to say that the Benot Lot were actually Shem Shemayim. Anybody who wants, you can read the introduction to one of the latest volumes of Rav Moshe's Igret Moshe. After he passed away, they wrote an introduction over there. The purpose of the introduction was an anti-art score biography introduction. It was anti-art scroll in the sense that they said, you know, all kinds of stories are told at our father afterwards. I mean, just for example, in the art scroll version, that everybody is davening the Beit Medrash in MTJ, and they're davening, and then the light right on top of his seat goes out, and at that moment he died. So they said, like it never happened or whatever, but when you tell the story, so it's a nice way to tell the story. So in the introduction there, they write an anti-art scroll biography about Rav Moshe's life. And there's some very interesting things there. But one of them is, he once met somebody who's dying from this terrible disease. And he said, the guy said, I'm going to tell you what happened, is that I had insulted Benot Lot. I had said that they were sluts and whatever, in Yiddish. I say sluts in Yiddish. Probably some of you do, but don't tell me. So I said terrible things about them, and they came to me in a dream. And I saw these two women who looked very, you know, with the whole Borka and the whole thing, and they look very, very tsanua, like more so. It's like Beis Yaakov on steroids, the way that they look. And they said, you know, we could have said that we got pregnant from the Holy Ghost or from God and started our own religion. We told everyone this was from our father. Right? And it says that this guy died of this terrible, and it says in the Rav Moshe believed the story. He believed that this guy really died because he said terrible things about Benot Lot. So anyway, Rav Moshe's introduction, his family put this in the introduction to the Igret Moshe. Apparently it's the difference after there's Yitzchak, because God says to him specifically, you know, Yitzchak, be Yitzchak. Yitzchak is going to be the one. Yitzchak is your only son. Yitzchak is the one, right? He sends them away. He said, look, this idea that he gave them matanot and that Chazal come and say that's shame tuma, is a frightening, frightening thought. But again, let's try to come back over here. Chazal tried to tell us that Benot Lot did the right thing, which is a very difficult argument to make. Right? Yes, we all agree. It's a very difficult argument to make. But they still, as much as possible, try to say that there's something over here which was L'shem Shemayim. Nonetheless, what did Benot Lot do? They do what they shouldn't have done. But I want to go back and tell you the tension. What is the tension over here? That they may be looking for somebody from the family of shame, and that's what they're not convinced they can find. So therefore, this is the only one who's around. The father's the only one, and they can't go and marry. That's the message they take out from stone being destroyed. Now, just pausing here for a second, I'm going to say way too quickly what I wanted to say. What then happens at the end of the parsha? Vayeshev Yisrael. So this is the end of this week's parsha. Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim. Vayechel ha'am liznot im benot Moav. Now, how surprising is that? That benot Moav or sleeping around. I'm sorry for putting it this way. Of all biblical characters, which girls are you least surprised that are... yes, they look very... by the way, I should be a little scared to say this now. But Benot Moab are the ones that okay, but... Now you realize something that just now happened. On the one hand, what was the first approach? The first approach, we're going to curse them, we're going to go against them, we're going to destroy them, and so on. That's the first approach. What's the second approach? The second approach, we'll marry into them. We'll be with them, which is very, very interesting, because there seems to be this appreciation that things are not exactly, you know, what we had considered them to be initially. Let me just continue with this a little bit. Continue still with source 14. V'yom Hashem Moshe, kachet koroshe ha'am, v'hoka otam la'Hashem neged ha'shemesh, v'yashav charon av Hashem Yisrael. V'yom Moshe el shofte Yisrael. He tells to the judges, the leaders, hirgu ish anashav anizim l'bal pa'or. So what is the main objection is to the people of the Baal Pa'or, the people who are doing Avodah Zarah. V'nei ish mi b'nei Yisrael, who we're going to find out in Source 15, is actually one of the leaders. He's a nasi, Beit Av Shimoni, Zimri. V'karev el echav et hamidyanit. By the way, that's very important. It's not someone from Moab. It's someone from Midian that he takes. What was God's instruction? To go and kill the people who were guilty of Baal Peor. God did not say anything to those who were sleeping with the Benot Moab. The seduction begins with seduction, and it leads over to Avodah Zarah, and God says, kill those of Avodah Zarah. And then, what does it say? Somebody goes and takes a Midyanit l'nei Moshe, l'nei kol ha'b'nezim, ha'imbochim petach ha'ol, ha'omoid. Now Moshe, right now, was rendered, he can't respond, he's paralyzed. Why? Because he himself is married to a Midyanit. So if Moshe does something right now, what will he be accused of? Oh, there's one rule. If you're the Secretary of State, okay, we'll start with that. Then there's no Freedom of Information Act. Okay. Over here, Moshe's concerned with the way that people are going to understand this. V'yar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Kohen v'yakam mitoch eda v'yikachon b'yado v'yavo achar ish Yisrael el akubav yitkor et shneim ish Yisrael v'et isha el kuvata v'tetzar magefa. So now, you have over here two separate things taking place. You have the Jews, actually two separate stories. The Jews with the Moabite girls, and then Avodah Zarah, and you have a leader with a Midianite, yes, with a Midianite, and he seems to feel, well, God didn't say anything about this. God said about Peor. God said about the Moabites, which means he over here is really attacking the leadership of Moshe and trying to get Moshe to, and Moshe doesn't respond as he shouldn't respond, and Pinchas responds as he should respond, and as I said, that story then leads to an end. But this question of Moab one day coming back and rejoining the Jewish people, right? Staying with the family of Shem, right? The story of them, before I just finish that up, take a look at source number 16. The Midrash Rabbah says, the whole 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, they behaved themselves in terms of relationships. V'yichal ha'am lezanot, that's what it is, v'yichal, it begins. Yesh ma'ayanot shemagadlim giburim, v'yesh chalashim, v'yesh na'im, v'yesh mechorim, v'yesh snu'im, v'yesh shtufim b'zima, u'ma'ayan shitim shel znut haya, v'hu mashke l'stom. This is a stom, it is a sodomite water source, and therefore all of the negativity of stom, that's where it comes from. And again, at the end it says, the Jewish people basically behave themselves, but when you get to this place, which means, what is it saying? It's saying that there's something over here which goes all the way back to stone. Let me, source 22 is also worthwhile, but it's eventually, and this really is the tension, eventually in source 23, which we're not going to read, is that there is a girl from Moab whose name is Ruth. And she does end up coming back and marrying back into the Jewish people. It is very, very different because here there's marriage and here she accepts and here she converts and here she performs chesed, which is very interesting because the whole starting point of the Lot catastrophe is chesed, which is twisted. Chesed, which is twisted in terms of the guests, and chesed, which is twisted in terms of the daughters. And it is this distorted chesed, but there's something there within this Moab family where it does eventually come and try to rejoin the Jewish people, and what it ends up producing is David, and eventually Mashiach ben David, which is really quite interesting. There are Kabbalistic sources which see this whole thing as some kind of a precursor, an attempted precursor to this. There are some Hasidic sources which are wild, especially Ishbitzer over here, who says the single craziest thing that I've ever seen in any commentary say in any place over here. But he says Zimri was right and Pinchas was wrong. Okay, so it's a little hard to say such a thing when God doesn't seem to agree. But what is the underlining issue over here is that he does understand the Kabbalistic point. He does understand that eventually there is this power in David. Listen, there are those, I'm just trying to remember who says it. It may have been Rav Tzadok, who was a student of the Ishbitzer, who says that for David HaMelech to go to war, for David HaMelech to be, you know, Jews don't fight. Where does this come from? It has to come from Moab. We need a little bit of contentiousness within us. Moab starts up with everybody. So in order for David to really get this, we need a little bit of other. Of course, that's what I'm saying. It's a strange thing to say. He says that something positive genealogically has to come from this other place. I just want to finish up and go back to the larger picture. I think, and I hope that all of you will agree with me by now, is that the background of this whole story really goes all the way back to Avraham Avinu. And there's many midrashim that try to connect Bilam one way or the other with Avraham, with the donkey, and getting up early in the morning and so on. But that's not the whole connection over here. This whole story goes back to Avraham Avinu because those are the protagonists. The protagonists of Moab and Midian and Bilam, all of them are connected one way or the other with Avraham Avinu. That's the one part. The other part that we need to pay attention to is that you have what we may have thought had no connection to this, A, the Brit Bein Abtarim. We realize there's every connection to this because it's basically what Moshe sends the message to Edom. But that should have already let us know that that's an important part of what's going on now. Of course it's an important part. Now we're going to fruition. Now we're going to complete the conquest. But not only is that important, what was also equally important was going all the way back after the flood and seeing the different families, realizing that it's the Ham line that we are conquering, the Avram line, which we're not conquering. And therefore, Moab and Midian had nothing over here to worry about, because it would have been a similar kind of thing in terms of what took place with Edom. Okay, here we are, we're coming back, and so on. But instead, they go on this, they're proactive. They try to curse, which is fascinating, which means they recognize the spiritual power over here. That we have the spiritual power. They try to curse us. When they're not successful with the cursing us, then they go to plan B. Well, let's join them. Well, that's really interesting, because as I'm saying, that goes all the way back to Benot Lot as well, of staying with the Shem family. And eventually, that's going to happen also, this merging. Listen, Baal Peor, that's not supposed to be part of the story. Avodah Zarah, that's not supposed to be part of the story. The reason that Avram sends away his children, Midian, from here, is not to be influenced by the locals and not to do the same kind of Canaanite practices and not to do the Avodah Zarah that they do. So over here, what you end up seeing is that the Canaanites, the Moabites, the Midianites, it's important where they're from, but it seems to be that the whole thing begins because of one narrow consideration. And what's that? The Emori took the land from Moab, and now we got to get our land back, and let's start World War III in order to get our piece of land back, instead of simply recognizing that these are children of Avraham Avinu, and there was a Brit Bein HaBetarim, and therefore they have the right to this land, and therefore they will not touch us because it's not part of what they're supposed to get, and we get this other land. But instead of recognizing the Brit Bein HaBetarim, they decide to go to this narrow cheshbon that they had going all the way back and trying to get their land back.